This is One Man's Family. One Man's Family is dedicated to the mothers and fathers of the younger generation and to their bewildering offspring. Today, transcribed, we present Chapter 5, Book 72, entitled Family Reaction to Rexford Frome. Since Rexford Frome purchased the old Middleton place near the Barber family home at Seacliff, Henry Barber has bristled whenever the man's name was mentioned. He met young Frome on one occasion and liked nothing about him. But though he is wary of the man, he is nevertheless greatly interested in the work of renovating the old mansion. The painters are already at work on the exterior, and some of the weeds in the driveway have been uprooted. At the moment, the head of the House of Barber is pacing slowly along the street, glancing from time to time at the Frome place, while Margaret, his favorite granddaughter, rides along beside him on her bicycle. He's paying scant attention to Margaret, but she doesn't mind.
So Pinky sent out form letters to all the neighbors and asked for work after school, because he spent everything he earned this summer.
Huh? Form letters?
Sure, asking for jobs.
Be careful you don't fall off that bicycle.
I won't. Pinky's got a new girl, Grandfather, Iris Rand. He said that women cost money.
Oh, yeah, women. And now, what about these form letters?
Nobody answered except just one person. Guess who?
Dr. Thompson? Mrs. Stewart? No? Then who?
The new neighbor back there in the Middleton house.
Oh, Frome.
Yep. He wrote a wonderful letter. He said he'd hire as many barbers as he could get at 75 cents an hour. Isn't that nice of him? Hank pulled weeds with Pinky this afternoon, and I went over, too. He let me carry out a bunch of old bottles, and he gave me 50 cents.
Yeah, did he indeed?
Well, don't you like it?
Never mind, my dear. Let it go.
But he's terribly nice. I like him very much, and Joan likes him, too. Joan thinks he's keen.
And where did Joan meet him, may I ask?
Oh, he picked her up the day and drove her to school. She told me all about it. Grandfather, is it true that Mr. Frome's real name was something else, and that his father was the gardener at the Middletons, and now he's rich and all that?
Margaret, I wouldn't pay any attention to this Frome fellow at all, or listen to any gossip. We don't know much about him.
But it's interesting, Grandfather.
Margaret, you hear me?
Okay, but golly, we never had anybody interesting move into this neighborhood before, Grandfather.
Well, what about the Beardsleys? What about the Tracy Newcombs?
But, Grandfather, they're just people.
Oh, just people, eh? Yeah. Well, never mind. Where is Joan right now, do you know?
Well, she was walking home from school last I saw her. She's probably home by now. She was headed that way.
I didn't see you sitting on the seawall there, Joan. What are you doing?
Oh, hello, Claudia. I'm just watching you. You know something? You look very pretty there in the garden.
Well, thank you.
I hope it's true we look alike.
What's all this?
Oh, Claudia, I had a perfectly marvelous experience this noon. An adventure.
Really?
Oh, you've got enough flowers. Come on and sit here beside me and I'll tell you about it. A man picked me up.
Oh? Yes, Joan, do tell me about that.
Well, put your basket down and sit here. Oh, golly, was he sophisticated. And he drove a long, sand-colored convertible.
Joan, with Nicky away in England, I wish you'd be especially careful about...
Will you let me tell the whole thing and not jump to conclusions?
All right, dear.
Well, this noon I forgot my science book, so I came home for it, and you weren't here, so I was walking back to school. Well, just then Uncle Cliff backed out of the driveway at Grandfather's, and I yelled, but he didn't hear me. He swung around, and I tried to attract his attention, but no luck. And just then the new neighbor came out of his driveway, and there I was yelling at Uncle Cliff over the hood of Mr. Frome's car.
Rexford Frome?
Uh-huh. So he kind of smiled and said, could he take me anywhere? Well, I looked at my wrist. I always forget I broke that watch of mine. And so he said if I was late to hop in, so I did. But he didn't drive off.
No? Jones, what did he do?
Well, he was staring at me, and then he said a funny thing.
Yes?
He said, young lady, I'll bet you a little Swiss watch that you're not Claudia Barber's daughter.
How odd. What did he mean?
Well, I must look the way you did when you were 16, I guess. Well, I stayed in the car, and he went back into his house for a minute. And when he came out, he drove me to school. Gee, I never heard such a romantic story.
What did he tell you?
He said he was just a gardener's boy at the Middleton place when you were all young. And his father was an immigrant, and he talked with an accent, and everybody made fun of him. Both of them. Now here he's grown up and rich, and he's bought the house where he used to live in the servants' quarters. And when he kind of hinted around to see if you were happily married, golly, he had the saddest look on his face, Mother.
Joan, you're making that up.
No, really. He said when he was a boy, you were the prettiest girl he ever...
Joan, quiet.
What?
Your grandfather's coming. Don't say any more. Hello, Dad. I saw Margaret pacing you on a bicycle a while ago. What became of it?
Oh, she had homework. Good afternoon, Joan.
Hi, Grandfather.
You know, this country must have wasted billions of dollars on sidewalks.
Wasted? I think it's very nice to have sidewalks.
But no one uses them. Everybody goes whisking by in a car. I enjoy my daily walk, but I swear by all that's holy, I never meet anybody on the sidewalk. Zoom, they go by in a car.
I thought you'd been walking a lot lately.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, I had a little checkup by Dr. Thompson.
I didn't know that.
Well, I didn't intend to have it. Nothing was wrong, you know, but that old pill peddler invited me to lunch, and before you could say Jack Robinson, he had that thing around my arm, that blood pressure gadget, and... then he was thumping me around and listening here and there. Fanny put him up to it. Served them both right, too. He couldn't find anything wrong. But he made one observation that I squeezed a little value from.
What was that?
There's no exercise like walking, he said. So I've lengthened my daily walk. And as I was saying, I never meet anybody on the sidewalk. They all go whisking by in a car. Oh, that reminds me. The new neighbor has a very pretty car.
Mr. Frome, you mean, Grandfather?
Yes, very pretty. It's a British convertible with a right-hand drive, Claudia.
Did you see me in it today, Grandfather?
No, Joan, I didn't. Were you?
I was just telling Claudia about it while we were sitting here.
Would you like to hear the circumstances?
Oh, as a usual thing, of course, it isn't wise for a young girl to ride alone with an older man in the car, and... personally, I think the new neighbor is a rather bumptious young man.
I don't, Grandfather. I like him, Joan.
Yes, well, I personally found him very disagreeable myself, but that's neither here nor there. I'll be getting on. You've heard from Nicholas, Claudia?
There was an airmail today. He's in Scotland this week.
I wouldn't fly that ocean if there were millions in it.
Well, there aren't millions for Nicky, or even thousands, I guess. He said the situation there is rather serious.
Yeah, that's putting it mildly from what I hear. Well, that's too bad. I'll be getting along now. Oh, if you need anything while Nicholas is away, Claudia, you call us.
I will, Dad. Goodbye.
It's a nice, crisp October day, isn't it? Goodbye.
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 Joan, he didn't mean anything.
Oh, sure he did, Mother. He just spoils everything if he can. Look, if you were as proper and dignified and refined as he wants you to be, nothing would ever happen to you at all.
Joan, dear, your voice carries.
I bet if I lived at his house, he'd make me give me back this wristwatch.
What wristwatch?
Well, I told you about the bet Mr. Frome made. It seemed rude not to take the wristwatch when he insisted.
Let's go into the house.
Okay. Oh, hey, you're forgetting the flowers.
Oh, yes.
I'll bring the shears. As long as he's so terribly rich now and trying to make friends with people, I didn't see any harm in accepting the wristwatch.
Come along, Joan.
Anyway, it was a bet, practically, and he lost. And, well, I don't see any harm in it. It's a beautiful little watch. Do you see any harm in it?
Come on in.
Of course, it does have diamonds in it, so I didn't think I'd wear it around because I still play basketball and everything. But I thought we could put it in the vault, and when I'm older...
May I see it?
Yes. Now I know what you're going to say. I knew when he helped me put it on what you'd probably say.
You don't trust my judgment very much, do you?
Yes, I do, Claudia. Mother, yes, really. But I know this is a terribly valuable watch, and... probably I'll never get another one like it. You'll say, take it back.
I haven't said it, though.
No, but you will. Grandfather Barber would. I know everybody would say Mr. Frome must be crazy or evil or something, but... well, I almost felt as if you were giving this watch... well, to a girl he knew long ago. He just happened to have it, he said. He bought it for his sister. But he can get her another one, Mother.
Joan, you trust your Uncle Paul's judgment, don't you?
Yes.
After dinner... why don't you walk over and ask him what he thinks you ought to do?
Okay. Okay, I will.
Dinner is just over at the family home. Henry and Fanny and their sons, Clifford and Paul, pause in the hall.
That is very good dinner, Fanny. I think Mrs. Kettleman's cooking is beginning to improve.
Not so loud, Henry. She might hear you.
I think she's pretty immune by now.
I think I'll go up to my studio where I can smoke my smelly pipe.
Oh, we have a nice fire going in the library, Paul.
I'll be down after I've had a smoke, Mom.
Hey, come along, Fanny. Don't urge him. We can do without that pipe right after dinner. I'll stir up the fire.
Hey, don't let me forget to run over and pick up Andy at Jimmy Vail's house in a little while.
Yeah, well, I'll be seeing you.
You coming in with us, Clifford?
Well, I... Oh, Paul.
Yeah?
Just a second. I want to ask you something. You go ahead, Mom. I'll be in later.
All right, Clifford.
I've got something I want to talk to you about, Paul. Okay if I come up to the top of the house with you?
Sure. Come on. After a big dinner, these two flights of stairs get to be pretty long.
Oh, I think you'll make it, old man.
Thanks for the confidence, sonny. Want to hold my palsied hand?
Just lean on me if you get tired, Pappy.
If I had just eaten, I'd challenge you to a race just to show you there's still some spark left in your older brother. Yeah. First flight.
One down, one short one to go.
Shorter, but steeper.
You could do with a new carpet on your stairs up here.
We may be a little frayed, but we're clean. There we are. After you. Turn on the light, huh?
I got it.
I'll put a match to this fire here. Sit down, Cliff.
Yeah. I remember when you wanted to fix up this attic, everybody in the family thought you were crazy. Now we all envy you. Most comfortable place in the house.
I could do with a couple of new chairs, I suppose, but I'm so used to everything just as it is, I hate to change anything.
Well, don't change this chair. It's wonderful. Kind of settles around you like a warm bath.
Not a bad description of it at that. Now, as soon as I load up this old briar, you want anything to smoke?
No, nothing.
I got a cigar here.
You want me to turn green?
I remember the first cigar you tried to smoke when you were about 13. You not only turned green, you ran through the whole color spectrum, ending up in an ashy gray.
Oh, man, was I sick. I got a licking, besides. It's funny how clear my mind is on everything up to the last 10 years.
They're beginning to clear up, aren't they?
Oh, little, I suppose. Sometimes I think it's working out, and then I run into one of those blanks, and then I wonder if I'll ever get them back.
Well, don't fight it. You're looking better than you've looked in a long, long time.
Yeah, I'm really feeling okay. But, I'm up against something right now, Paul.
Oh?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to come up and talk to you about.
Well, fine. Fire away.
Well, first of all, there's Roberta.
Don't tell me there's anything wrong between you two.
No. In fact, there's anything but that. I've been seeing an awful lot of her lately, and we've even talked about getting married.
Well, is that bad?
I don't know. How can I ask anybody to marry me the way things are now? I mean, without a job or any plans for the future?
Well, I see. And the stumbling block is the job situation, huh?
Well, of course, there are other things, but that's the main one right now. The worst part of it is, Paul, I don't know what I want to do. I don't seem to be interested in anything. Oh, I don't mean I'm in a depression the way I was before my accident. It isn't that, but it's just that, I don't know. I don't seem to have any ambition or initiative to get out and find something. Of course, when it comes right down to it, I'm not really fitted for anything.
Oh, rubbish. You got a good mind, attractive personality, haven't you?
Well, I don't know, have I?
Well, you certainly have. Cliff, honestly, you could do almost anything you set your mind to.
Yeah, but what? Dad's been hinting around lately about me getting back down to the stock exchange. The thought of that place gets me down something awful.
Well, a lot of other things besides the stock exchange. You don't have to go down there just because Dad likes it.
Yeah, but I don't have any alternative to offer him. If I could say to him, that isn't what I want because I got something else in mind, be all right. But I haven't. As a result, I feel kind of guilty when he suggests calling up his old firm to make an appointment for an interview. I just have to stall him off. Now I'm getting so I feel a little guilty being in the house. I feel like he's looking at me and wondering when I'm going to get off the dime.
Well, that's probably all in your mind. I don't believe he's thinking that at all.
Well, maybe not. But you know yourself how Dad is. He thinks everybody should work unless he's sick. And I certainly don't believe there's anything wrong with me now. Not enough to keep me from doing a job anyway. Of course, the way Mom treats me, you'd think I was still at death's door.
What do you mean?
Oh, she... She always wants to bring me breakfast in bed. Keeps saying she thinks I should lie down and take a rest when I'm around here in the daytime. You know, stuff like that.
What did Dr. Thompson say the last time he looked at you?
He seemed to think I was in fine shape. He said, you might not have much of a memory, Clifford, but you'll probably live to be as old and cranky as your father. And he slapped me on the pistol pocket and told me to get out of his office, not to bother him anymore.
You don't get much coddling from that old boy.
She'd say not. I told Mom what he said. She thinks he's heartless and unsympathetic.
Yeah. Well, Cliff, you got a problem, no question about that. I don't know what to say to you.
What do you mean?
I mean, I don't know, just what I said. You've been through too much for me to rattle off some advice which might be the wrong thing for you.
Now, look, Paul, I asked for this. If you're afraid of hurting my feelings or something like that, you needn't be. I want you to tell me what you honestly think.
Okay, suppose we do it this way. I'll throw out a couple of thoughts that have occurred to me, and if you think they apply, fine. If you don't, you can ignore them. How's that?
That's fair enough, shoot.
First, let's assume that you're well enough to work, right?
All right.
Next, let's assume that it's necessary for you to get a job in order for you to get married and to be happy.
Yeah?
Well, now, what's preventing it?
That's what I don't know. Except that I know I won't be happy down in the financial district. I tried that once.
Well, we'll rule that out. Have you thought of what you would like?
Well, no, not exactly.
Why not?
Well, I just can't think of anything, that's all.
There's something that's keeping you from doing what you really know you've got to do eventually. To wit, get out and find a job, huh? Any kind of job is going to be rough going for you at first, you realize that?
Oh, sure, I know that.
All right, now, you've been through several months of shock and pain. Naturally, we're all deeply concerned over you. We've all looked after you, worried about you. Well, babied you, particularly Mom. Now the time comes when your manhood is asserting itself. You want to get out and do a man's work and take your place in the world again, but you're not quite able to do it. Huh? Why? Now, Major, I'm asking you this more than telling you, you understand?
Oh, go ahead. I think I see what you're getting at.
Exactly. It isn't so different from any of the rest of us. We all want to be babied and mothered a certain amount. When we get it, we want to cling to it. We want to regress back to our childhood and be taken care of instead of battling the world and meeting all the challenges that life presents. We do and we don't. With you now, the urge to hang on to the safe feeling is stronger than the one to emerge from the nest and try your wings again. You're a little fearful. But that'll go away. One of these days, you'll get up and say to yourself, well, I've had enough coddling. I'm going to go out and get a job. You'll say, so long, Mom. See you tonight and when I get home from work. And that'll be that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head, Paul. Thanks a lot.
Main thing is not to start pressing. You'll find out. Come in, come in.
Oh, I hope I didn't interrupt anything.
Why, hello, Joan. Come in, honey.
Hiya, Joan.
Hello.
Sit down. You're just what we needed. Youth and beauty.
Grandmother said you were up here, but she didn't say you were busy.
Well, we're not. We're just fanning the breeze a little, that's all.
We came up here to spare the family from the smell of my pipe.
Grandmother told me to tell you that Hazel was here, and she thought it'd be nice if you came down.
Well, that will do, madam.
Could I talk to you a minute first, Uncle Paul?
Sure, go ahead. I'll go down and see what goes in the lower regions. I'll tell him he'll be down pretty soon, huh?
Okay.
You'll finally probably find Grandfather asleep. He kept nodding all the time I was there, and Grandmother kept telling him not to go to sleep. Oh, for goodness sake.
Are you going to sleep again? Certainly isn't very complimentary to Hazel.
I don't mind, Mother. Let him sleep.
Huh? What is that, honey?
Well, if you took a nap in the afternoon, when I tell you, you wouldn't be falling off at 8 o'clock in the evening.
I wasn't asleep, Fanny. Just closed my eyes for a second, that's all.
Why don't you go to bed if you're tired, Father? You don't have to stay up just because I dropped in.
Nonsense. We don't get to see you often enough as it is. He can stay awake when you do come over.
I'm trying to tell you that I am awake, my dear. I've heard every single word that was said.
I guess we'll have to be more stimulating, Mother.
Well, if he goes to bed now, he'll be awake at 4 in the morning and start wrestling around until he gets me awake. I wouldn't mind if he woke at 4, if he'd only be quiet, but he's never satisfied until he's got me awake, too, so he can tell me he can't sleep.
Yes.
Look at that hurt expression, Hazel. That's just the way Clifford looked when he was a little boy after he'd been reprimanded. Identical, same expression.
Very amusing, I'm sure. Not to mention the fact that identical and same is tautological.
When your father can't get back at me any other way, he always finds something wrong with my grammar.
Well, at least you don't use slang. I'm getting so I'm using some slang expressions that I've picked up from Hank or Pinky about half the time.
I understand that Hank and Pinky have been working for that upstart who has invaded our neighborhood.
You mean Rexford Frome?
If you insist on dignifying him with a name which, by the way, is not his own.
Well, lots of people have changed their names, Father. I don't think you can hold that against him.
Perhaps not, but I'm always wary of a person who does it. I believe that God intended us to bear the name given us by our fathers, whether we like it or not.
But a woman changes her name when she gets married.
That's different. That's in accordance with the law and in compliance with the custom. Besides, I'm speaking of a man. A man should bear his name proudly. Not to do so is a slur on his father.
Yes, but during the First World War, so many innocent people with German names were made to suffer so unjustly. They had to change their names to escape persecution in many cases.
Well, that's right. And you remember how people used to talk about this Frome's father, old Freilich? Why, it was disgraceful. I don't blame him for changing it. I would have done the same thing.
And I suppose you also approve of his conduct?
What conduct?
He's deliberately trying to insinuate himself into the family by whatever devious means he can contrive. And I hope you haven't forgotten that he has quite openly confessed that he once was in love with Claudia, your own daughter. And a married woman whose husband, by the way, is now in England.
Oh, you sound just like Judge Hunter when you go on that way. You put in everything but aforementioned. I think you'd be glad to have the old Middleton place get fixed up. You've been complaining what an eyesore it was for months.
He really is spending a lot of money on the place. It'll be a great improvement to the neighborhood, Father.
To my mind, a good neighborhood is made not by the appearance of its houses, but by the quality of the people who live in those houses. This man I don't consider worthy of a house in Seacliff.
Now, Father, that makes you sound downright snobby.
It certainly does.
Put any name you like to it, but I don't like that man, and furthermore, I don't trust him.
Well, Paul's talked to him a couple of times, and he said he found him rather interesting.
And what does that prove, pray?
Don't you think Paul has pretty good judgment when it comes to men?
I do not. Not when it comes to men or women. What has he done about that wonderful girl slaving at Jack's house?
Well, let's not go into that again.
I had no intention of going into that, as you put it. I was merely using that as an example of Paul's poor judgment. And I've seen him lavish attention on too many unconventional people to have much faith in his assay of a person's worth.
Hey, what's all the argument about?
Dad, you look kind of red in the face. Hi, Hazel. Joan said you were here.
Yep, I'm here. What have you been up to?
Oh, I just left Joan and Paul up in the attic. I started to come right down here, but I got sidetracked on a telephone call I had to make to Roberta.
She gets prettier every time I see her, Cliff. You'd better not pass that up.
Well, I don't think I will.
You're going out, Clifford?
Yeah, don't you remember? I told you I had to go pick up Andy. He had dinner over at Jimmy's house. Oh, I got to run, too. It's getting late. Oh, want me to drive you home, Hazel?
No, I brought our car, thanks.
Where's Dan?
Oh, he's talking business with some man at the house, so I thought I'd get out from underfoot.
That's the kind of a wife to have, one who gets out from underfoot. Well, I'll be seeing you in a little while. Bye now.
Bye. Oh, doesn't he seem to be in fine spirits, though?
Yes, but I worry about him, though.
Why, Mother? He seems particularly well to me lately.
Your mother worries about him too much, in my opinion.
Well, if a mother doesn't worry about her son, I don't know who would.
Yes, yes.
Well, I think I'd better be getting back home. I told my family I'd only be gone a little while.
Oh, it's early yet, Hazel. How would you like some hot chocolate?
Oh, no, really.
What's this about hot chocolate?
Well, Paul, I didn't think I was going to get to see you.
I guess it's my fault, Hazel. I got him cornered up in the attic and talked his head off.
Well, are you two going out? We're all bundled up.
Yeah, Joan and I are off on a little mission.
Sounds interesting.
May prove to be very interesting. We're paying a call on our neighbor, Mr. Rexford Frome.
What's that?
What's the matter, Dad? You object?
Paul, I have nothing to say about your relations with that person, but I think you're making a grave error when you involve Joan with him.
Involve? What do you mean?
I mean that the less this family sees of that man, the better it's going to be for all concerned.
Well, Dad, you may be right, but we have no choice about seeing him tonight. This trip is necessary. Well, we use this old-fashioned knocker, I guess, Joan, huh?
Oh,
Well, good evening.
Mr. Fromm.
Hello, Mr. Fromm.
Well, this is a great honor. Miss Joan, Mr. Barber, come in.
Mr. Fromm, Well...
Here, this is no place to talk. Come in. You must forgive the bleak look of these empty rooms, but the library's furnished. There's a fire. Let's step in there.
Well, we can't stay, Fromm.
Oh, I wish you would. Here we are. I was sitting here a moment ago. Oh, come in, Miss Joan. Take that chair by the fire. Cheery room, isn't it? Sit down, Barbara. I was sitting here a moment ago wishing someone would call. I have some hot coffee here.
Oh, I'd like some coffee, Mr. Fromm.
Well, good.
It's a handsome old room. I remember it from my boyhood.
Really? And I from mine.
Judge Middleton was very generous with his books. He urged me to read when I was a boy. Lent me books. He was a nice old fellow, wasn't he?
He was a saint, Mr. Barber. All the happiest memories of my boyhood have to do with this room. Your coffee, Miss Joan.
Oh, thank you.
Sure you won't change your mind, Mr. Barber?
Very well. Black, if you please.
My father was old Otto Furlish, the gardener here, you know. I was Hans Furlish, Kraut, they call me, or Heine. At any rate, one day when my father was ill, he was a naturalized American citizen, though he never bothered to explain that. He was a proud man. Your coffee, Baba.
Oh, thank you.
What was I saying? Well, at any rate, when I was mowing the lawn one day, I stopped and stared in that window. Judge Middleton was reading here at the desk. He looked up, smiled, and invited me in. Those were very happy days. I first met David Copperfield in this room, Huckleberry Finn and Tom Jones and the Three Musketeers, Count of Monte Cristo. Over the years, I picked up furniture like the furniture that was here when I was a boy. That's why it's the only room in the house that's furnished. I'll get to the others in a week or so. You've come, I presume, to return the watch.
What?
Well, of course.
I really couldn't accept it, Mr. Fromm. It's beautiful, and it was very generous of you, but I shouldn't have taken it at the time. I knew myself I shouldn't have, so here it is. But it was nice of you, and thank you just the same. It's so beautiful.
My dear young lady, I knew you wouldn't be allowed to keep it. I expected you to be back with it.
Was this just whimsy on your part, Fromm?
Not at all. Of late months, I've been able to indulge my impulses. I've been very lucky, Barbara. As they say in the movies, I'm loaded. Oil. So I blow with the wind, as it were. I should have liked very much to have brought to this little girl the kind of happiness that comes with a lovely, extravagantly costly gift, so I tried. Miss Joan, you'll give me A for effort.
Hey, Fromm, I wish you'd come over and pay me a call sometime, will you?
You can't express yourself adequately, you mean, when you're a guest in my house.
If that were the case, I couldn't do much better when you were a guest in mine.
Touché. I thank you for the invitation. Your estimable father will receive me, you think?
Well, I'm sure he will.
Oh, yes. The code, of course. He, too, would be eminently correct to a guest in his own house. Thank you. I'll drop in some afternoon about tea time.
Well, shall we go, John? Well, thank you, Fromm. You know, you ought to outgrow your bitterness in this lovely old house.
That's an interesting remark. I hear you're something of a psychologist. So am I. Perhaps we can have a joust, huh? I hope you'll forgive me, Miss Joan. Perhaps sometime, when everyone knows me better, I can make you a gift you'll be allowed to accept. By the way, do you remember my sister, Mr. Barber? Christine Furlish? You remember her?
No. As a matter of fact, I don't.
Well, perhaps you wouldn't. She wasn't here very long. She's joining me presently.
Well, that'll be nice for you.
It'll be nice for everybody. She's one of the loveliest women in the world. She's Mrs. Abbott now, a widow. You must come over for dinner.
Good night, Mr. Fromm.
Good night, my dear. I understand your stepfather is in England.
Yes, he had to go on business.
Give my very best to your charming mother. I've been very fond of her for a lifetime. And no reflection on your uncle here, but I rather hoped your mother would come with you this evening to return the watch. Good night. Come again. Come again.
See, Uncle Paul? See, he's wonderful, didn't I tell you? Or a little bit crazy. Which, I wonder?
Both, perhaps, darling. You know, I rather think he's what this stodgy old neighborhood has needed for a long time.
You have just heard Chapter 5, Book 72 of One Man's Family, written, produced, and transcribed under the direction of Carlton E. Morse. Chapter 6, entitled Rex Frome Invades the Barbers, will come to you next week at this same hour.
You want the best Sunday listening, so today and every Sunday, listen to NBC for top comedy entertainment on the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show. Then stay tuned for the adventures of Sam Spade. For the best Sunday listening, stay tuned to NBC. You're tuned for the stars